Today's episode is a masterclass in how real businesses are built. Not overnight, not from a viral movement, but from years of doing the work. Our guest started by getting into the trenches, living abroad, learning the industry from every angle, and building real relationships. Over time, that deep understanding became a foundation for something bigger. We'll talk about what it means to truly know your business, why having a plan is only step one, and how execution, day by day, is what separates ideas from results. We'll also dive into the realities of going solo versus having partners, and the mindset behind spotting opportunities. If you're thinking about starting your own business someday, or just want to think more like an entrepreneur, this conversation will give you a roadmap. Let's get into it. Welcome back to Business Isn't Hard. Today, I'm joined by Jason Quagliata, president and founder of Q Logistics Group. With over 17 years leading his own firm and a deep background in international freight, 3PL, and supply chain strategy, Jason has built a company that connects continents and fuels commerce in the Trans-Pacific trade lane. From launching Q Logistics in Phoenix to developing strong ties across Asia, Jason's journey is all about execution, adaptability, and building trust across borders. Welcome to the show, Jason. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. Thanks for having me, Oliver.
Yeah, this is awesome. I'm really excited to get into this. So I know you've built up Q Logistics Group. Can you tell me how you got here today?
Yes, I started in the business back in 96, believe it or not. And like many of us, I worked for a larger company, moved around a couple times, gained quite a bit of experience in both the domestic and the international arena, and was fortunate in early 2000s to spend some time working and living first in Europe. We were in Amsterdam.
That's
and
really
then,
cool.
Then from Europe, I moved to Asia and lived in Shanghai for about 3 years. And after having that experience globally, came back to the United States, came back here to Phoenix, and helped another company with their startup operations in Asia.
Wow.
And by about 2011, I decided to start my own entity, and we formed the beginnings of Q Logistics Group. And, you know, like you said, we're in almost our 17th year, and time flies, I'll tell you that. So we've adapted to the market, and over the years, we've had a few warehouses here in Phoenix. Actually, three warehouses we've grown each time. And really, probably in the last 10 years, we've kind of found our sweet spot. And that's been predominantly managing supply chains, like you mentioned earlier, in the Trans-Pacific trade between Asia and the U.S. And a big portion of our business is coming from China, Taiwan, Korea, Vietnam, Malaysia, Indonesia. And we manage a combination of ocean freight and air freight, and then 3PL logistics for customers here once the cargo arrives in the U.S.
Wow. So you're doing a lot of everything. How did
Yes.
you get into the logistics industry to begin with? I know you were kind of in sales for a little bit with one company, and then you branched off to do it, start your own firm.
That's a great question. When I graduated college, I went to the University of Arizona down in Tucson. Sun Devil. And when I graduated, I was fortunate. I was working with a headhunter, a guy by the name of Larry Beckham out of Texas. And he positioned me for quite a few interviews with companies all over the U.S. And I first went to work for a company in litigation services in Dallas, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
And then within a year, he presented me with an opportunity to go to work for a freight forwarder in San Francisco. And I knew nothing about freight forwarding. It sounded intriguing. It sounded interesting. It sounded like it could give me an opportunity to potentially travel. And so in 96, I moved to San Francisco and got into this transportation logistics space. And obviously a lot of people hear the term supply chain now. It becomes kind of a common thread. But when I got in the business, we were what was called a freight forwarder. And, you know, that was the beginning. And I took a little bit of a, obviously took a little bit of a gamble. I didn't know much about the industry, but it's where I've been now for quite some time.
Yeah. And so I know you had that connection with the staffing agency going out of college, and that was a huge help, like just as a mentorship point of view. Can you tell me a bit more about, well, I guess how important was that to you, right? Was that a big thing, especially in the beginning of your career?
Yeah, it was pivotal because during college, I worked for a company in Nashville through the summers while I was down at the University of Arizona. I was able to work for a company in Nashville, and that exposed me to quite a few different people that became lifelong friends, and a few of them became true business mentors. And one of them was a gentleman named Larry Beckham, who we stayed very close. And as I got closer to graduation from school, he positioned me and my resume and my skill sets for various interviews with companies. And yes, a lot of it was wrapped around selling opportunities within organizations. So he was a dear friend and a strong business mentor. And, you know, those are hard to come by when you're in college, but I was fortunate to find somebody that really had some great business skill sets, and he was very, very much involved in helping me kind of find my way.
Yeah. And now that you're on the other side of it, you know, as a really seasoned professional, do you have any advice for, you know, kids or young professionals who are maybe searching for that mentor? Like how do we approach it?
Yes. And that's a great question. It's the same conversation that I've had with, you know, with my kids as they've come out of college. I think the key is always putting yourself in a position where, you know, being in the ring, but putting yourself in a position where you're in meetings, you're just involved with different levels of people, leveraging professors if they're willing to provide mentorship, finding anyone through friends, acquaintances, family members that may own a business that could give insight on what it's like to run a business or be part of a business. Folks that work in the corporate sector, obviously working for large organizations, you know, just trying to find people that in your sphere and in your network that can give you guidance and insight and understanding. And, you know, you learn a lot, obviously, in the classroom, and then it's all about trying to transfer that to the real world.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It doesn't exactly connect, you know, well, it connects, but I feel like a lot of the stuff we learn in the classroom is very technically based, like maybe how to balance a GL or whatever, accounting skills, supply chain skills, versus the real world is a lot of relationship building, you know, working, yep, using your relationships, etc. Speaking of relationships, actually, especially as someone who was in sales and is now a business owner, how important were relationships for you especially in the growth phase, like in the very beginning of starting your own firm?
Yeah. And that was going to be the next thing is, you know, just as you develop personal relationships in college and you're meeting individuals from all over the country, and those relationships, and many of them will become lifelong friends, for example. In business, you know, early on, it's the same thing. You, in any sales environment, when you're meeting clients, especially in the very beginning, in the infancy of your career, you know, you're hoping that someone's going to take a chance on you, right?
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, with the right level of integrity and trust and product knowledge and being, adaptable and relational with people and having just good, kind of common sense communicative skills, invariably you'll have people that will believe in you and give you an opportunity and buy from you. And those people you'll never forget. Obviously, I can think of some folks in my early days in San Francisco. I can think of Rick Harbaugh and Stacy Cornelius, who were with two large companies that gave me a chance early on. And those were relationships that lasted for a long, long time. And those relationships are built on trust, integrity, and being able to deliver on promises, right? In a service-based industry versus a product-based industry, in our industry selling services, we have to execute and deliver. And when you can do that for customers, they typically they stick around.
Yeah, I'd assume so. But that's the goal, like you said, of a service industry, especially. It's very based off of what you're able to provide to them via your service and do it well. So going into especially that founding, obviously you utilize those relationships to an extent. What was the process of creating a supply chain group like? I'm assuming that takes like a lot of upfront work, capital, etc. Was that a scary jump for you? I mean, it sounds like it needed a lot of investment.
So in terms of, when I founded the business in 2011, and I guess it parlays well with what we were just talking about. Usually, when you work for a large organization, then you decide to go take the leap and do something on your own. Usually, you'll have the confidence of your ability to sell a service and you understand it well enough to execute. But most importantly, usually, you have to have a few customers that are willing to give you an opportunity. So to answer your question, Oliver, there were definitely there were a few customers that, over a conversation, I said, "Hey, I'm going to probably start my own entity. Would you give me an opportunity?" And the answer was yes. So in the international sector, we depend a lot on partners all around the world, as you can imagine, right? So I was fortunate because of spending enough time in both Europe and Asia that I had the relationships and the infrastructure and the partners in those geographies, so that once we had new activity, new shipments, they were already in place. So I remember signing my first lease for my first building, and quite honestly, I didn't necessarily know where all the money was going to come from, but I signed the lease and we figured it out. But it's a combination of being able to provide the service, work with the right partners around the world. Because, for example, if we were moving freight from Asia into the US, I needed to have partners in Asia that could execute that portion. Then I need to have the right partners here to help execute. And then combine that with, the warehouse component. And obviously, needed to lease trucks and rent trucks and hire staff and various things. So, I think if you look at it from a holistic perspective and you draft a complex business plan, it's very overwhelming.
Yeah,
But
sure.
if you take it day by day, it's a cinch by the inch, it's hard by the yard. If you just focus on what's in front of you today and try not to worry about 6 months from now, 8 months from now, but just focus on what's in front of you. And then once you start to have some success, in other words, you handle, in our case, we handle shipments for a new customer and they pay us, then it gets very exciting.
I really do like that approach, like the day by day approach, because especially for the people who are starting, larger businesses, not employee wise, but just like the amount of effort it takes to build such as, a cross oceanic supply chain company, it's a lot. But like you said, if you can take it day by day, it makes it a lot easier.
No,
That's why.
and you know what, Oliver, again, what I realized is, I think it was when I look back at, starting the business, you have to have a plan. And, you know, for college students, you hear a lot about business plans, right? You hear a lot about business plans. And I don't want to discount that. I think it's really important, right? You have to have a plan. But then you can look at a plan, you can rewrite it, you can review it, you could show it to 100 people, but then sooner or later you have to execute.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And as someone who, or I think it's important to have a plan, and I think you are able to generate that plan, it sounds like, because you are already in that world, right? You are already in the supply chain industry. That's
Yes.
something I've seen a lot of people do, is they're in an industry for a while, they work in it, and they're able to branch off from there. Is that a path you would recommend? Like maybe not starting immediately, but getting a foothold in kind of what you're doing, and then deciding to break off and do something on your own from there.
Yes, absolutely. And there's probably a few key components. One, when you work for another organization, whether it's small or large, multinational, you're going to invariably get very good experience, right? You're going to get very good experience in that business, the people, the systems, the culture, et cetera. So yes, you absolutely need to have a good foundation. You need to understand all aspects of the business, finance, accounting, operations, customer service, et cetera. If you can understand all of that, then the question becomes, okay, what's my value proposition if I do this on my own? And then, Oliver, the other interesting question, which is maybe the most important, is do I go it alone or do I do it with partners? And I, for whatever reason, chose in 2011 to go it alone with my business plan, no other investors. You know, I chose to start my entity with myself as the core principal. Obviously, you know, you could start a company with a multitude of partners, and it's important to understand that with that comes much more complexity.
What do you mean by that? Are you glad you went on it alone, or?
Yes, absolutely. What I mean by that with the complexity is, for example, you know, I have a few buddies over the years that they started freight entities and they had either one or two partners. So two or three individuals, you know, starting a company, then, you know, all three have to agree on everything. All three have to agree on the equity positions. All three have to agree on the capital investment. All three have to agree on roles and responsibilities. And as you can imagine, you know, if you go out with three buddies, you're not always going to agree on what you're going to do and where you're going to go.
So as far as kind of understanding every aspect of the business goes, obviously that's very important. You need to have that foundation before you really start something yourself, or else, you're just gonna have so many gaps. Do you have any advice for people outside of maybe classes, which cover a lot of stuff in school, but especially once they enter the workforce, how do they get exposure to all of those elements, especially if they're only, in one specific role or position?
Yeah, and that's a tough one because, you know, for example, if you go to work in a large accounting firm, you're probably going to be predominantly focused in a very much in an accounting sector. I was fortunate because in a sales role for most of my in all of my career, I've been able to be part of all aspects of the business, right? You sell it, you have to service it, you have to collect it. It involves and in our business, in the transportation supply chain, you know, you can see it, you can feel it, you can touch it, right? Everything that we do. So I was always, from day one, I was always very much involved in understanding how we moved freight, how we processed the freight, how the systems worked, how we operated, how customer service teams worked. So, you know, the trick would be to try to have as much understanding of the details, because that creates more value, right? If you understand, you know, how in our case, you know, how the supply chain operates, how ocean freight is handled, how air freight is handled, how the documentation is handled, then you create more value, right? And but it's I think the easiest way to look at it is it's just getting under the hood, for example, and getting into the details.
Yeah, I think it's really important to, well, obviously you were in a sales position which gave you the opportunities, but you wouldn't have done it without being curious, right? I think it comes down to a little bit of a mindset thing. You have to be looking for it too. You have to ask questions, get to talk to people and kind of try to really understand it. Because, no one's gonna come to you and just tell you everything that you need to know to start a business.
Yeah,
So
that's true. And you know what part of that is you talk a lot, you hear a lot about it in school, in college. You talk about the entrepreneurship elements, right? And I think I've always had a bit of that, even at an early age, just having a sense of wanting to be an entrepreneur. And if you have that, then you are going to ask a lot of those questions. You're going to ask the why do we do it like this? Why do we do it like that, right? And then invariably, I think someone with a real entrepreneurship mindset that goes to work, like myself, and like what we just talked about, that went to work for a large company, you're going to be exposed to so much about how that company operates. And any entrepreneur is likely going to say, well, I think I could do that a little bit better.
yeah. Do you have any tips as far as spotting opportunities or things like that go? Because obviously you were able to branch off from that large corporation because you saw an opportunity, right? You saw a fit in the market for you to do some that little thing better. Is that something that you were always thinking about before? How did you think about it? What's your approach to maybe like spotting opportunities as an entrepreneur?
And that's an interesting question because when I started in the industry, I was in the domestic side of things, and then I learned and I was exposed to the international side of transportation, global transportation, and that really piqued my interest. And I think what I realized after working throughout the world and then coming back to the United States, I think what I realized is that that was my niche. That was my specialty. That's what I felt most excited and confident and comfortable with. And frankly, the margins in the international side of transportation are traditionally higher than the domestic margins. And I also, to add on that, there is more complexity with international transportation than there is with domestic transportation.
Sure.
So it creates an opportunity where I can easily create a little bit more value, and there's less of a competitive landscape than in the domestic transportation world.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, there's a lot more moving parts. Out of curiosity, was a language barrier ever an issue for you, just be considering you're working in so many different countries?
No, ironically, one of the reasons that I was somewhat able to go to Europe originally was because I had studied and spoke French for 8 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I had positioned myself with our executive team that, A, I would go abroad, but B, I had some language skill. Ironically, I ended up in Amsterdam and they speak Dutch and English predominantly. So, I didn't have a need to use much of the French except for in Belgium. But then when I moved to China and my children went to a Chinese international school, I did learn kind of guttural Mandarin very quickly.
Okay.
But the other reality is most international business throughout the globe, the majority of the time, minus a few pockets of the world, the majority of the time, English is kind of the commonality.
Yeah. It's good
So
news for us speakers.
we have a little bit of an advantage there. But I also found that fascinating, and especially in China, being able to speak enough Mandarin to kind of gain the respect in a meeting was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's an interesting tip, right? I guess I'm assuming there are a lot of people who are clearly international will say, probably don't speak Mandarin. So I'd get that they would, be a little surprised and kind of welcoming to someone who at least made the attempt. I think that's important, right? You're making an attempt to connect, which is huge in that relationship building.
And I was able to speak well enough that I could really, really, I could get their attention in a conversation, and it would be kind of a nice starter if you know what I mean. You know, you jump into a meeting in a conference room, really anywhere in the planet, but you know, you sit in a conference room and you're trying to create rapport and create a relationship and trying to develop business partnerships. And obviously, if you can do that in the language of the country you're in, there's some value to that.
Yeah, no, those are some great international business tips. And obviously, you've been international in business internationally and domestically for so long. I'd like to get into a quick lightning round because there's a few questions about that I'd like to ask. The first of which is, what is your favorite business book or podcast?
That's a tough one. Now there's and it just escaped me, but there's a couple sales books that Zig Ziglar had a few great books that in college, you know, we read, and a couple of the names are escaping me, but Zig Ziglar was probably one of the best motivational speakers that kind of spoke to me at a young college age.
Interesting. Yeah, no, he's great. What is your biggest pet peeve in business?
I'd say not being organized, whether it be, you know, day-to-day functions or in a meeting. I think being organized is so critical. And the best example is, you know, whether you travel across town in Phoenix or you travel to Hong Kong for a meeting and you sit down and you're trying to accomplish something with someone. You know, you got to have purpose. You got to have clarity, and you've got to be organized. And if you're not, it usually becomes exposed pretty quickly.
Yeah, I can see how that would be really frustrating. What is your best networking tip, especially someone who has built so much on relationships? I'm curious to hear your take on this.
I'd say one of the when the opportunity presents itself, I'd say trying to golf with a prospect or a customer is maybe one of the most valuable ways to spend time. There really isn't another format where you can spend one-on-one time for 3 to 5 hours with someone and kind of break the ice relative to the business and personal.
Yeah, that's interesting. What percent of people would you say golf, I guess? I really have no idea what percent of
It's
business people.
probably, you know what, it's probably not a high percentage, but in corporate America, I would say that there, you know, you look at the corporate America landscape and golf's usually probably on the top of the list in terms of entertaining for a lot of people.
I'm sure.
So that's just one avenue. You know, obviously being able to get out with the right customer and spending a meal and spending some time is great, but you know, golf's probably one of the few things where a customer would agree to that, and you'd be able to spend that amount of time together.
Yeah, I really like it, especially as a golfer. It's fun. What is a skill that every leader should have?
You know what, I think you have to have a plan and a purpose. You really have to know, you know, what you know what drives you, what are you intentional about? Because if you are, then your service capabilities, again, speaking of our industry, but if you have a plan and a purpose, then a lot of the other things kind of fall into play.
Yeah, it's a great foundation. Last question of the lightning round. What is your go-to method for handling stress?
Exercise.
Yeah, big one, I'm sure.
Exercise, whether it be the gym, could be swimming, could be treadmill, but really, I think anything exercise, and you know, that's I would say as you get older, it becomes more important. And you know, when you're young and you graduate college and you start your career and you have a clean slate, I think exercise would probably be one of the most foundational things you can do, because it'll take your mind and your body to where it needs to be, and it's probably one of the most critical, it's probably the most critical ways to deal with any stress.
Yeah, I fully agree. Both physically, mentally, emotionally, it's just all around a great way to relieve stress. Well, thank you, Jason, so much for being on. We'll end with this final question. So, over the course of, the 17 years starting your own firm, even before that, what has been the biggest key to your success as a leader, as an owner, as a salesperson in general?
I think that one's easy to answer, and it is don't give up. Don't give up. When you start a business, when you work in corporate America, you just have to show up. But when you start your own business and you take that leap, and you're on an island, there's a lot of unknown, a lot of uncertainty, a lot of question marks. And if you believe in yourself, believe in your products, services, capabilities, then you stick to the plan and the purpose. And no matter what, you just don't give up.
It's a mindset thing. That's great advice. Thank you so much, Jason, for being on. This was a great conversation. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Oliver. I enjoyed it as well, and hope you have a great weekend.
You too.
That was Jason Quagliotta, founder of Q Logistics. Jason began by embedding himself in the world of global logistics, living and working across Europe, China, and the US. He didn't just observe the industry, he immersed himself in it. Through curiosity and hands-on sales roles, Jason learned every aspect of the business, operations, finance, customer service, gaining a holistic view that would later fuel his own venture. He built relationships, asked questions, and steadily gathered the insights and trust required to branch out. This was key. Without his years spent in the supply chain industry, Jason never would have had the know-how or the connections to build his own business. And when the time came, he had a plan. But more importantly, he executed on that plan. He chose to go it alone, avoiding the complexity of partners, and leaned into his niche. His key? Discipline and persistence. Jason made it clear, the leap doesn't work without preparation, but it doesn't work without action either. You have to start. You have to not give up. Thanks for listening today. Jason found success when he tried to speak Mandarin to his colleagues in China. In other words, they appreciated his effort. I encourage you to put in a little more effort this week at work, in school, or in life. Go the extra mile for someone or something. It won't go unnoticed. I'll see you next time. In the meantime, keep building something great. Thanks for tuning in.